KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Former state lawmaker Carl Wimmer says he gets this question all the time. Does the leadership of the LDS Church get whatever it wants when it comes to Utah politics? And the answer, he says, is clear. It's a resounding yes. Wimmer is no longer in the legislature. He's no longer a Mormon either, which has given him a little more freedom to explain just how the church influences the process in this state. Most of the time, it doesn't weigh in. Doesn't really have to when you consider most legislators are active Mormons. But Wimmer says when it does get involved, it's willing to push pretty hard. Today in the program, Carl Wimmer is joining us, among others, to discuss how lawmakers in this state balance the allegiance to their church against their political principles. Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we hope you'll consider joining them. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. Visit us online at KUER.org for details. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. State Senator Mark Madsen, a Republican from Saratoga Springs, didn't like the LGBT anti-discrimination bill that was making its way through the legislature this year. It was a bill that had been presented before, of course, several times before, but it had never even made it to the floor. And most everyone agrees it wouldn't have gotten a vote this year if the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints hadn't gotten involved. Church leaders held a press conference in January to express their support. Now, that was remarkable enough, but they also dispatched lobbyists to make the case. Senator Madsen thought the bill had a double standard in it. It protected the LGBT community, he thought, but not private businesses, not enough anyway. And Madsen was honest enough to go on the floor of the Senate and confess he was conflicted.
And I'm bothered anytime there's a double standard. And I'm bothered that it appears that my church is telling me, or my church is actually endorsing government, using force to compel me and my fellow citizens to live by a standard that they're not willing to live by. So I have to try and figure out, am I supposed to do as my church says I'm to do? Or am I supposed to do as my church does? And that's tough for me. I don't like double standards.
Madsen was also honest enough to admit that even though he had serious reservations about the bill, that just because of the church's endorsement, he was going to vote for it. Today in the program, we're talking about the influence of the LDS Church on Utah's Capitol Hill and how Mormon lawmakers balance their political views with their allegiance to their church. We're hoping you'll join the conversation with your own impressions, your comments, questions. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'd also like to hear from those of you on Facebook and on Twitter. Last week, the Salt Lake Tribune published an article exploring this subject, and they built the piece around the comments of former state lawmaker Carl Wimmer. Wimmer has said that the LDS Church gets whatever it wants when it comes to Utah politics, and he explained that some of what he saw as strong-arm tactics of church lobbyists and leaders. Carl Wimmer is joining us first on the program. He was a Republican serving Harriman's District 52 in the House from 2007 to 2012. He was a co-founder of the Patrick Henry Caucus, a group that worked on states' rights issues. These days, he's working with the Gunnison Police Department in Gunnison, Utah, and he's joining us from his office there. Carl Wimmer, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, I guess we should start with the question of why is it that you decided to speak out now? You've kept this stuff kind of to yourself until recently.
I have. And in hindsight, well, no, I'm glad I still spoke out. But well, I never expected the firestorm to come from this like it did. The main reason I spoke out is because I'm in an interesting position where a lot of people will ask me questions, having served in the legislature for three terms and having been a lifelong Mormon up until 2 years ago, people look at that and they say, okay, maybe he can tell us the inside scoop. And I think sometimes they're expecting more than what they get. But I, with the passage of the LGBT legislation, the anti-discrimination legislation, I got just an inordinate amount of people asking me, so what role does the church really play in the legislature? This thing, this bill failed six or seven times in the past and never got off the ground, and now it just flew through the legislature. What happened? And so I sat down and put pen to paper and wrote that blog, which just really, for my blog, it went viral.
Was so part of this was based on the fact that you were not crazy about the fact that this anti-discrimination bill passed.
Yeah, I didn't like some of the things that it did. It clearly, not to throw out sour grapes here or anything, I certainly don't want to sound like that, but it obviously created a lot of protections for the LDS Church, but it did not create protections for, you know, if you're a private Christian who owns a little Bible bookstore, and let's say you employ more than 15 people, and you expand to that point, you have no protections. And so it seemed to me like it really carved out and protected every entity that the LDS Church owns, but did not protect anybody else. And so I just listened to Senator Madsen. You played his speech on the Senate floor, and I have the same concerns that he has.
You mentioned sour grapes, and that obviously comes up when people hear your perspective on all of this. As you say, you left the Mormon Church.
Yeah.
You had problems with certain beliefs. So how much influence did that have, frankly, on the fact that you decided to tell this story?
Well, if people had not asked, if people had not come up to me and continually asked the question, since leaving the legislature and having run for Congress, the number one question I get, besides, hey, do you want to run again someday? The most popular question I get is, what role does the LDS Church play in Utah politics?
Right.
And if people were not interested, I would have never written this, because I have no agenda or vendetta to bring down the LDS Church. I don't think about them that much. I don't think about my past all that much. It doesn't affect my life. And so it's not one of these things where I'm just out there to cause trouble or be a rabble rouser. I certainly don't want to be that type of person. But the fact is, I get a lot of questions about it. So I thought I'd write something. And if somebody asked, I could send them a link to my blog. And
We'll put a link on our website. I think people should take a look at it. It is pretty, I think a lot of people have taken note. I mean, obviously you mentioned some particular criticisms, and we'll get to that in a moment. But you're fairly, you're not attacking the church throughout this thing. I mean, what you say also is that the church very rarely gets involved. And in fact, you were only really approached twice in all of your experience. Yeah. So I guess we should say that you're not just attacking throughout the entire piece. You do offer some circumspection there too.
Yeah, and I really do try to be fair, and I mentioned that in the blog. To be absolutely fair, they did only approach me twice when it was two issues that they really, really cared about. But when they do approach you and they care about it, you know, they expect you to get in line.
Well, let's talk about the approach, how they go about it. In 2008, the LDS Church opposed the sale of these so-called Alco-Pops in grocery stores.
Yeah.
These are these flavored alcoholic, like wine coolers, stuff like that.
Yes.
Now, you opposed the bill. You saw it kind of as government overreach. And you say the church lobbyist you talked to, once they found out you were going to go against them on this issue, because they wanted this bill passed, they pushed pretty hard. Would you describe what that process was like?
Well, on this particular bill, I think they knew that they had the votes. They had the Eagle Forum was actually supporting it as well. And so they had a lot of support for this legislation. And so they did not push me as hard as they did push on the immigration bill.
Right. But hold on, because I want to just, this is the crucial point, I think, about the Alco-Pops point is what they told you, which is they said, okay, they figured they may not get your vote. But what they did tell you was that this position came, quote, directly from the top.
Yes, and that was the first time I've been approached. I was approached by the church. It was my first term in office, and I got a note. They wanted to meet with me in the hall, so I go out, and I specifically remember it was John Taylor and Bill Evans. I don't know if they even are the lobbyists anymore. I'm being told that they may not be, but it was John Taylor and Bill Evans, and I met with them in the hall, they were very cordial, no doubt about it. But they did say, that's exactly what they say. They introduce and say, hey, we're here to talk to you about this particular bill. The Alka-Pops bill is what they were calling it. Our orders come directly from the top. That's a standard saying from them. And I didn't ask for any further explanation. I assumed that meant they got it from the first presidency.
But wouldn't you assume that always came from the first? I mean, I don't understand why that's a problem. Don't you figure every time a lobbyist approaches you, it's, quote, directly from the top?
You would certainly hope so. You would certainly hope so. You hope that they're not out there, you know, doing their own thing. But they just add that as they stress that. They stress that. And as a firm believing Mormon at the time, that was very tense for me, especially since I opposed the legislation. I had only been released as Elders Quorum president just shortly before being elected, and so it was difficult. It was hard, and I'm not going to lie, I was nervous, but I did tell them I can't support the bill. I don't support taking the alcohol out of the stores, you know, private owners, and giving it to the government liquor stores.
Yeah.
And as I turned to walk away, and to this day, I don't know the motive behind it. I like to think that it was just to put my mind at ease. But, you know, John Taylor said, hey, Wimmer, Representative Wimmer, you don't have to worry. This will not affect your position in the church. Your standing in the church. Voting against us will not affect it. And I thought, okay, well, that's a relief.
But, you said it's a relief, but couldn't that be construed, frankly, as a veiled threat, too?
You know, looking back on it, I like to think that it wasn't, but it certainly could have been, and I have no doubt that there's other legislators who would have viewed it that way.
Well, other legislators have been a little bit more intimidated than you, and you've talked about some of the heavy-handed tactics that came along with HB 116. This was the bill that proposed a state worker card for illegal immigrants. You and some of your colleagues were quite opposed to it.
Yeah.
The LDS Church was for it. And this was a big deal for them, apparently. This is where we get to the sort of portion of your story where you say church lobbyists meeting with lawmakers sort of took on the kind of the form of what you call a priest, what is it? Personal priesthood interview, a PPI. Would you explain what you mean first for the uninitiated?
Yeah, so it's kind of an inside joke in the legislature that when the lobbyists, the church lobbyists, meet behind closed doors with a legislator, they call that a PPI, or a personal priesthood interview. It's a tongue-in-cheek joke referencing legitimate PPIs, which the church has, you know, within the confines of their church and within the confines of leadership and the people who go to the church. But when talked about in the legislature, it is referencing a very intense meeting. It is referencing a meeting where you are in a room with the lobbyists and potentially, you know, people from leadership who are trying to get you on board with a particular bill. In reference to HB 116, I was very outspoken in opposition. And they talked to me on the phone. I had the lobbyists talk to me on the phone, and, you know, I continually told them I'm never going to vote for this bill. And I talked to him in the hall. I told him the same thing. I never had what we call a PPI in reference to this bill. However, on the night the legislation was going to be run, there was a legislator who I've kept unnamed, who was a newer legislator who opposed the bill.
he came onto the House floor and approached me. And he was, in my blog, I say on the verge of tears, but he was in tears. And he was devastated. And he came up and asked me, have you had your PPI yet? And I said, no, I don't think I'll have one because I've stopped answering their phone calls. And I said, and he said, and he went on to explain that he told me he had one and that he had to vote for the bill. And he turned, you know, he turned his head to the ground. And he says, I never thought my church would do this. And I put my arm around the guy and I just like, hang in there, be tough. You know, I felt horrible for him. It was not long after that that a leader from the House came onto the House floor, and I knew that this member was against the bill as well. And I approached this leader, and I said, how much of what's going on tonight is because of the church? And he said, all of it. He said the whole thing, and he says, in fact, if I have to wait, you know, normally what you do, it takes 38 votes to pass a bill. Mm-hmm. So if you sit there and wait, you can wait until the vote is pass or fail and then vote how you want. And that's what he said he had to do. He says, if the bill is not going to pass, I have to vote for it.
You know what's weird about that, Carl Wimmer, is that those are the tactics of political leaders in legislative bodies. They'll give you a pass. I mean, you hear this about national legislative tactics, for example.
Right.
They'll say, all right, we need you to come with us. But if we think we've got the votes, we'll give you a pass so you can go back to your, you know, your voters and you don't have to deal with this. But for a church to use those same kind of tactics, I think that does seem interesting to some.
Yeah, you know, it really is. And it's and this the member of House leadership that I talked to, he says, I have to vote for it. If it's going to fail, I have to vote for it. And I said, you know, you had a PPI, didn't you? And he started to walk away. He said, yep. And I was like, wow. It was, I had never experienced, and you're I was a SWAT team commander for 5 years. so I know what intensity is. This was an intensity that I had not felt before. It was an intensity of people just, it was bad. It was a bad, nasty feeling on the House floor that night. And to this day, I'd like to see how many people that voted yes would have voted no if they had voted their conscience rather than out of, you know, religious dedication.
You haven't mentioned, in your blog post, you did not mention the person's name or the position, but you did say that a local ecclesiastical leader of yours had contacted you and attempted to persuade you to vote for the bill. So like a stake president or a bishop or whoever it might be, they said, we've gotten word from the church and they're asking me to help nudge you toward the church on this issue.
Yeah, it didn't come out that way at first. It was, hey, just want to talk to you about 116. And I do not remember the exact precise conversation. I do remember how the ending went, but
how did it go? How did the ending go?
Well, I was quite surprised, and I said, why are you interested in this? And that's when he said, well, I got a phone call. And I said, who from church headquarters called you? And he said, all I can tell you is I got a call. And that was the end of the conversation. And that's how it went. And that really, really upset me. I mean, and, you know, I talked to other legislators, and other legislators, they say, well, I've never been bullied. I never had an issue with it. And usually, I mean, I can't speak for other people. I can only speak for what my experience was and the experience of others who were on the House floor that night.
One thing that's you mentioned in your blog post is that you had for years had been trying to get the LDS Church involved in more aggressively to weigh in on anti-abortion measures.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that you've been kind of baffled over, and it seems a little angry with. The church was fairly unequivocal, at least from your perspective on that blog post, that they did not want to engage on the abortion question.
Yeah, to this day, that one still, to this day, it baffles me, and it just surprises me. And this is not a secret. It was me and Representative Herod and Sumption. You know, we sat down and we were talking to John Taylor and Bill Evans, and we said, "Hey, you know, you just got the Alcohol Pops bill passed. It flew through. You guys obviously have a lot of influence. We would like to use some of that influence on an abortion bill that we tried to run last year and the year previous, and it failed." And they turned us down flat. They just said, "They said we have been told from the top." You know, that's how we've been told from the top that they will not engage on abortion issues. And the dumbfoundedness must have been shown on my face, because that's when one of them really kind of in an honest, open conversation just said, "I get it." He says, "I don't understand, and sometimes we don't understand all the things that are going on and why they are so willing to engage and push on alcohol legislation, but they stay away from the right to life issues and the abortion issues. Even though they obviously are pro-life, they speak out on it all the time, they will not get involved legislatively."
Do you think it's because they're the exceptions that the Mormon Church lays out for abortion are, I think it would be fair to say, somewhat liberal compared to other religious institutions? I'm guessing the church you're in right now doesn't have the same exceptions as the Mormon Church does in regards to abortion.
You know, you saying that's the first time I've ever thought of that, but that makes a lot of sense to me. And yes, that's true. They are more liberal than what an evangelical Christian would believe, yes.
We're pretty much out of time, Carl Wimmer. Let me ask you this finally. I guess it goes without saying, you figure that this anti-discrimination bill wouldn't have had a chance without the influence of the LDS Church. Do you know whether or not there were PPIs going on to get those who were not necessarily on board, like Mark Madsen, at least?
Right.
He did get on board eventually, but I'm wondering if it took a PPI from your perspective.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I can say is there is secondhand from another person who serves up there in the legislature, who told me that, yes, they were going on. Regardless of that, there is no doubt in my mind that bill would have failed yet again if they hadn't endorsed it and worked to get it passed.
Carl Wimmer, he is working with the Gunnison Police Department these days in Gunnison, Utah. That's where he joined us from, his office there. Carl Wimmer, thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, God bless you. Thank you very much.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation if you have comments or questions. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUVR. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, this question: is the LDS Church still influential in Utah's Capitol Hill? Which you don't even need to ask it. It's pretty obvious. Always has been influential for obvious reasons. But over the years, have things changed? When a Mormon lawmaker's ideological views conflict with his church's positions, like immigration reform or the recent anti-discrimination law, is it still a given that a lawmaker will go along with his church, if he's Mormon, that is? That's what we're talking about today. We heard from Carl Wimmer earlier on the program to talk about some of the tactics of the LDS Church when it is lobbying for cases they find important. Joining us now on the program is Matt Canham. He's an investigative reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. There's a link to his article on the LDS Church and lobbyists on our website. We use that the basis of this conversation today. Co-authored it with reporter Lee Davidson. Matt Canham, welcome back to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Quinn Monson is also back with us, an associate professor of political science at Brigham Young University, also a senior scholar for the BYU Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy, along with David Campbell and John Green. He's the author of a book called Seeking the Promised Land, Mormons and American Politics. And Quinn Monson, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
So let me ask you, Matt Canham, first of all, your impressions of Carl Wimmer. I mean, obviously you paid attention to his blog post when it came out.
Right.
Because it was, what struck you? The candor in it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the candor in it, I think if you cover politics in the state of Utah, you've talked to a lot of people about what level of influence the LDS Church has. It's very rare that a legislator would talk about it in that level of detail. Now, when we looked at writing a story about it, we wanted to use him as an entry point. But there are some complicating factors with his story. As you pointed out, he's no longer Mormon, and that allows people to easily question the way he describes things. And that doesn't mean what he's saying didn't happen to him, but tone and word choice can matter. So what we did is we talked to at least a dozen other lawmakers, and probably more. You don't usually keep a list when you're doing interviews.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to write about is that when a church leader explains a point of view, even if it's somewhat vague, individual legislators are going to take that in very different ways. We're not talking about a normal lobbyist here. We're not talking about a mayor or a government leader or a university president or a company leader. You're talking about someone who is in charge of your church, or at least is talking on behalf of someone who's in charge of your church. That's a totally different level of lobbying.
You found some pushback to Carl Wimmer's perspective. A lot of people saying, I don't know what he's talking about. No one was giving me strong arms.
Right.
No one had approached my bishop or my stake president.
Yeah, we got no support of that one. I mean, that does seem a little beyond the pale. And I'm not saying it didn't happen, but that would be a bit extreme to have a local religious leader talk directly to a parishioner and try to pressure them on a bill. One thing I would point out is that I wouldn't expect a lot of them to have that experience. More than 80% of Utah's legislature is Mormon, and a lot of times they're going to be in line naturally with what the LDS Church wants. Therefore, there wouldn't have to be these sort of conversations. When this would come up would be when a member disagrees with their church. And there, as we pointed out, there's only a handful of issues where the LDS Church has really been vocal in recent years: alcohol, immigration, and this non-discrimination bill. Other than that, they lobby on a ton of other issues.
Yeah.
But they're much more, you know, quiet. They're more vague. I mean, I wrote about in the story Todd Weiler, who is a senator from Woods Cross in Utah, that got a call about a bill that would make cockfighting a felony. And it was from, you know, the lobbyists just wanted to say, hey, just so you know, we're interested in this bill because we think with cockfighting comes gambling. And the LDS Church is against gambling. We want you to take a serious look at it and the conversation. You know, that bill took a couple years to pass, but it did pass this year. So it's not always, you know, a big, heavy push.
Quinn Monson, how do you see it just broadly? The idea that, as Matt pointed out in his article just a moment ago, 80%+ of lawmakers already have an indirect influence because they go to church on Sunday, because they know what their church is thinking on different kinds of issues. And what effect does that have just generally, and historically, what effect has that had on the way they behave politically?
Well, I think it's true that the church has a lot of influence on its members day to day. There's no doubt about that. And so the question becomes, when is the church particularly important in the legislature? And I think Matt's right, that there's a lot of circumstances where they don't have to exercise influence, and it may or may not be because they have a particular position. I think there's a lot of presumption that goes on by legislators and other elected officials about what the church would want them to do, and they may act accordingly. So you have to ask yourself, what circumstances would exist that would make the church's involvement important? And it would have to be an issue that's particularly visible, right? So there's a lot of lobbying that probably goes on for reasons, related to lots of interests at the church. I mean, the church is an enormous institution in the state of Utah. It has a lot of entities, nonprofit, for-profit, and so on. And so they're going to be interested in many, many avenues of public policy. But most of those are invisible to most people.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be it's a visible issue. Then the legislator that they're trying to influence has to disagree with them. If they already agree and they're on record agreeing, then
no problem.
They don't need to call or exercise influence. Leave them alone. Let them do what they were going to do anyway.
Yeah.
And then I think the church would need to think, well, do we need their vote, right? How close is this vote likely to be? And if it's not going to be close, again, leave them alone, right? So there are only a few circumstances where all of those things combine. And then the church has to be willing to sort of push hard and go to the mat and risk it becoming public that they're really pushing hard. And I can only think of one instance where that was really true in the last couple of decades, and that's this immigration bill.
Yeah.
Right? Where it was really important to them. And I think the setting the stage for that is to look back and see the firestorm that broke out in Arizona when Arizona's legislature passed a very conservative immigration law and received a lot of criticism. And I think the church in Utah, the LDS church, for better or worse, had the legislature done what Arizona did, the church would get some of the blame,
yeah.
Right? They would take a lot of the heat for it,
yeah.
Whether they were responsible or not. And I think that's a public relations disaster waiting to happen. And I think also it just so happens that the doctrine and theology about all of us being children of God and keeping families together helped to steer the church in a direction that they exercise some influence there.
Well, you can't answer this question, but which was the more powerful influence for the church? The fact that it might take a PR hit, or the fact that it had a doctrinal position in terms of compassion that was related to it? You know what I mean? It's so complicated because they tend to weave together. The idea that they want it.
Well,
and the
PR hit coincides with not wanting to be seen as hating other people who are children of God, right? I mean, you don't want to come down, be seen as coming down with a position that should be, you know, contrary to your doctrine as well. So I don't know that you can separate those two.
Right. Matt, what do you think about that? I mean, and it was interesting to hear Carl Wimmer talk about the fact that you had LDS church lobbyists or the PR team or whomever it was essentially counting votes and saying to certain lawmakers, if we're okay, you get a pass. You can vote your conscience.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, the LDS Church is a very sophisticated organization. They're smart. They're savvy. Anyone who's tracking legislation knows that all you got to do is get your bill passed. And I think with the LDS Church, what they're looking at on these very specific issues is success. And to be honest, I don't know of one bill where they have put their weight behind it that hasn't passed. On the flip side, I can't name a bill where they said they didn't want it to pass and it actually did pass. I mean, they get their way on this stuff.
So let me name one.
Do you have one?
Back in 2000 or back in the 90s, there was concealed weapons. So they took a position on concealed weapons that said we don't want concealed weapons to be allowed in churches, and the legislature went against them. Okay. Now why would they do that? Well, again, it's one of these things where it's a visible issue. They took a position, but they didn't go to the mat on it, right? They didn't like they did on immigration.
Well,
or even non-discrimination.
That seems like they went to the mat almost more than anything because they went public.
Yeah.
And not only did they go public, these unnamed, you know, lobbyists, they had the leaders.
But now they're not lobbying the legislature. They're just announcing a position.
Right. Right. So, but which is pretty sophisticated, yes, way of directly lobbying legislators, is it not?
Yeah, and had they if you want to do some kind of counterfactual back to 2011, let's say that they had
2011 was the immigration.
Well, the immigration bill. Well, let's say they had instead of they sort of dribbled out announcements about immigration that were increasingly specific. So the very first ones in late 2010 even were very vague about
so
what they wanted.
So they try to be vague at first and see how much they get.
And it wasn't working. We don't want this. And I think Matt and I were talking about this before we came in. I don't think they knew exactly what they wanted. I'm not sure they actually wanted a piece of legislation to pass. I think what they wanted was, let's not be Arizona. And so they were sending signals about, let's be nice and let's not be Arizona, basically. But as the legislature moved along in its session, it became clear that something was going to happen, and that's when they got behind the bill, HB 116, or 116, what they got behind. Yeah.
So here's a critical question, I think. If a lawmaker, which is the more powerful influence on a person's life and or vote, their political ideology or their church? Now, I think in some circumstances that would be a legitimate question. I mean, the influence of the LDS Church on its people is pretty powerful. But what do you make of that? Are you seeing in the case of immigration, are you seeing in the case of even this anti-discrimination, people whose conservative political ideology made them blanch a little bit about voting for these things that the church was supporting? In the end, they went with the church. But it seems like there was quite a tug from their
not
political...
everyone did go with the church.
It's true.
I mean, I think that what you said actually is the crux of that quote you played from Mark Mattson, a senator who was just really concerned about this. Senator Mark Mattson is a very conservative person, and he believes that he votes on his principles, and he's not going to bend those principles. And his principles and his, you know, his political ideology came into conflict with his church. In that instance, he sided with his church. Not everyone did. Senator Margaret Dayton, who's also from Utah County, she voted against it. There were
but essentially, you pointed out she found a technicality.
Well, and I think that's one thing that that I noticed, that those who voted against it tended to describe it as a technical problem with the bill, that they didn't like certain specific language, a phrase here or there. They didn't say, I know my religious leaders have encouraged me to vote for this, and I am disagreeing with them. That's part of what Carl Wimmer was saying.
You don't see a lot of politicians doing that in Utah,
that's
by the way.
That's political suicide.
They're not dumb, and they're not going to come out and say, "Oh, I don't agree with the church, and I'm going to vote against them because I don't believe what they're saying," or something like that. That you're right. That
you
is
don't
suicide.
Say that. That's just
so you come up with another explanation.
You come up. Huh. Well, one issue that I think is fine, really interesting in this debate is the Zion Curtain, which is the wall that the legislature requires restaurants to have that separates people from watching alcoholic drinks being made. There are conservative Mormon legislators who are running a bill and supporting a bill to eliminate that.
Right.
The LDS Church does not want it eliminated. That bill didn't go anywhere. But those people are still, you know, sponsoring that bill. And I think that that's one of these examples where, you know, individual legislators grapple with this issue on their own. And these people have decided that it's okay for me to take a position that is against that of my church. I have a fundamental political difference. That's fine. I can handle that. Some of them wouldn't do that.
It's important, I think, to point out here that that's the church's actual position, right? So the church's own statements on this, even though they will lobby sometimes to get legislators to take a particular position, their own position on elected officials is that they should vote their conscience and they should do what they think is right to do their job. And so that's why I think there's a lot of cognitive dissonance here for some elected officials, where they're pulled in one direction by the church, but the church also gives them a pass to do what they think is right. And I'm not saying it's easy for them, but they're free to do what they need to do.
So if let me just I'm not sure if you know if this was the case. David Lifferth, Margaret Dayton, both LDS lawmakers opposed to the anti-discrimination protection bill, voted against it. Any sense of whether they got a pass from the church saying, all right, we already have the votes, you can vote against it? Any sense of that?
I don't know. I mean, they're both very conservative people.
Yeah.
I would have been very surprised to see them vote for it. I mean, even with this, you're not going to get everyone. And as Quinn said, you know, certain lawmakers are much more comfortable being in that position. I don't know if they had a pass. I mean, I don't think this one was going to be a close vote. I mean, as it got close there, it was pretty clear where this thing was going. So I don't even know if the LDS Church had to go to that level to you know, hint that, hey, if you could be with this, if it's tied, we really appreciate it, or not. I mean, this one looked like it was clear sailing. But there were a lot of lawmakers who had very emotional speeches about this being a big change for them as an individual, because they've been opposing this, as Carl Wimmer said earlier, for I think 7 years before. Yeah. This is not – like, this bill's gone nowhere repeatedly. They didn't even get out of committee before this year.
The other part I'd add here is that it's not like public opinion wasn't in favor of the non-discrimination law as well, even before the church got behind it, even before the church announced it. So there's a lot of polling that would suggest that even strong Republicans, even a majority of strong Republicans and conservatives were in favor of, now a narrow majority of that particular group, but even before the church's announcement, this was not a political loser. So I think he's right. I don't think the church had to say much especially after they made their public announcement.
But let me ask you this: if could it hurt someone in a district Let's say I was campaigning against Margaret Dayton. No. Margaret Dayton. She got a clear indication from the church. She voted against her church. Now, could that hurt her? Whether you could campaign on that, that would be extraordinary. But, could you imply that a lawmaker had some ethical failings because they didn't go along with their church? I mean, would that hurt you politically in a race?
I think that somebody like Senator Dayton would be given a pass for a single instance. I think if
you mean if voters would,
yeah,
give her a break.
Yes, but if there was a pattern of consistently going against the church, then that would add up to something that would be inconsistent with her constituents, yeah. And that's what would get her in trouble. I'm not sure that it would be a win to actually make that explicitly a campaign issue, but I think it would be noticed over several instances.
I wonder if Matt, you tell the story in your article of Stuart Reed. Mm-hmm. He's a former state senator and a church lobbyist, which is interesting. He wouldn't talk to you, but he did this op-ed piece for the Deseret News, which you reference in your story. He decided not to run. He had a religious liberty bill in place.
Right.
That he wanted to run. And he got, not only was he lobbied by the LDS Church, he was lobbied, I guess, in particular by Dallin Oaks.
Yes.
Of the Quorum of the Twelve.
Right. And I would point out, so Stuart Reed was a former lobbyist and then a senator.
For the former
lobbyist for the church, then becomes a senator. So he doesn't need to be talked to the lobbyists of the LDS Church. He can probably call Dallin Oaks himself and bypass the lobbyists. And I'm sure what happened in this situation is that he had a bill and he wanted a stamp of approval or not. So he called Elder Oaks, ran it by him, and
do you think it was like an Indiana type bill?
Well, I mean, it obviously would have been far more conservative than the bill that passed in Utah this year and could possibly have been. I mean, I think there, at that time and still today, there's a lot of people who believe that individuals who have disagreements with a certain lifestyle should be able to live that in their business. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I don't know for sure. But what it came down to is that Elder Oaks didn't believe that the timing was right and looked at this as a way – I mean, kind of foreshadowing what happened this year is that this is a way to get to a compromise. So he asked them to hold off. I did find it quite interesting, actually.
Well, if you look – Los Angeles Times had an article – that talked about the bill that passed and the history of it. There, these talks and negotiations over the anti-discrimination law have been going on for years and years.
Really,
and so I think he's right. It would have upset there was a carefully crafted compromise that brought everyone to the table, and I think that throwing another bill into the mix at the last minute would have upset something that had been very carefully crafted over time.
But what are the ethical implications of the leader of a church making a direct ask to a legislator, a lawmaker, please hold that bill? Is that in any way perceived as unethical? I mean, the church has a right.
Of course they have a right to be involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it comes down to it would feel more awkward, whether it's ethical or not, if it was a bill on taxes or public education funding. We're talking about a bill about religious freedom. So asking a religious leader their opinion on a bill about religious freedom seems pretty
commonplace. That affects something that the church was intimately involved in over a number of years.
So that one,
of course, they're going to make a call there. I don't see any conflict at all.
Quinn, one of the things you've written about in your book, Seeking the Promised Land, is, and this question seemed interesting to me. I wanted you to talk a little bit about it, because you asked the question, what type of Mormon is most persuaded by church leaders? What's the answer?
Well, it's those who believe most deeply in following the church's authority, right? So there's a tug of war in terms of Mormon theology about whether or not you should follow the church's authority without a lot of question whether or whether you should seek your own personal inspiration. And those that come down on the side of following the church's authority are deeply influenced by it. And I think that's every Mormon to some extent. I mean, if you're an active Mormon, you're not ignoring the church's authority. But the speed with which you internalize it and sort of take it into how you live your life is going to vary a little bit.
Have you detected at all any kind of a gap between the official church position? I'm thinking same-sex marriage is one, where I think you're seeing, or at least the perception of, and you can speak to the numbers, a younger generation that has a more permissive, a little bit more liberal view on same-sex marriage, certainly gay rights as an issue. Are you seeing any kind of gap between that and the more traditional, pretty straight-line approach of leaders within the LDS
Church? Sort of. You can see it in terms of younger active Mormons being more open to things like civil unions. But I haven't seen a large-scale change over toward favoring gay marriage yet in terms of public opinion. So certainly more liberal or more open to alternatives aside from an outright ban on gay marriage, but civil union seems to be where those folks go.
But more broadly, are you seeing on the right, if you look at the immigration issue as an example, more Mormons unwilling to go along with their church because their political views get in their way? On the left, same-sex marriage, you have maybe a younger generation of people who believe in civil unions, who believe in gay rights, not willing to go along with their church on that particular. They'll take most everything else. This one, they're not willing to go with.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up. So one way to answer your question is to say whenever the church gets involved in a political question, I think this explains why they do so carefully and try to stay out of it a lot of the times, is because whenever they get involved, they're bound to go against somebody's preconceived politics. And so if they're favoring Proposition 8 in California, they're making some folks on the left, admittedly a smaller group, but they're making them very uncomfortable. I mean, it's very hard to be pro-gay marriage and live in California and be a Mormon in 2008. On the other hand, if you go against a hard right position on immigration, you've got some very conservative legislators and others that are made very uncomfortable. So it comes back to this question that we asked earlier about, well, when my politics tell me one thing and my church tells me another thing, which do I go with? And inevitably, when the church speaks out on a public issue, it's going to cause that question for at least somebody.
Yeah. What are you seeing within that question?
I talk to a lot of political operatives for my job, and they're younger, and I've talked to people on both sides. And there are LDS Democrats in this state, and I talk to a lot of young Republicans. And from that group, I do feel that there's been a marked shift in recent years of support for gay marriage, in the sense that what they look at it is, look, I'm not in favor of gay marriage, but as a difference in a government, you know, classification, I can find that and I can be okay with that. I see that's where it's going and I don't have a problem with it. And whether that's broadly in the LDS, you know, community beyond people who are that politically involved, I'm not sure. But I do see that. And I think that, as Quinn said, there is this tug and pull. I mean, I used to be a Washington correspondent.
Yeah.
And so a much more obvious comparison would be someone like Harry Reid, who is the Senate Minority Leader now, and someone like Orrin Hatch. They've both served very long in the Senate. They're two different parties, and they have two different viewpoints on quite a few issues. Gay marriage is one of them. Harry Reid came out in favor of gay marriage, and well before the church did anything, even with non-discrimination. You know, so I think you have seen some push on that in both ways. But I think sometimes federally you might see more of this disagreement than you would say in a very conservative state like Utah.
Let me ask you this finally, about a minute left. So maybe not time to talk about this entirely, but so you have this year this anti-discrimination bill passing overwhelmingly, right. Kumbaya on all sides, this bipartisan sort of coming together, the the gay rights community, the gay community, with LDS church leadership. It was pretty extraordinary. But now you've got the details you've got to work out on those, on these bills and the question of public accommodations and those kinds of things. What are you expecting is going to be the next sort of step in this process, if you've thought that much about it, Matt Cannon?
No, I think that this isn't over. I mean, I don't think this will say, yes, it's done and we're never going to talk about it again. I do think that there'll be ongoing debates over what those accommodations will be. And if the agreement derived this year stands the test of time. And Mark Mattson even talked about it. Like, you know, there's small businesses who are run by the LDS Church, and they get a, you know, operate under a different standard than a small business that's run by a member of the LDS Church, but not the church itself. So these debates will go on. I do think the one thing that's not going to change is that that's not going to get out of the law that you can't discriminate a person based off sexual orientation in their workplace or housing. I mean, I think that's going to be in the law.
Final quick thought.
The key is some differences between allowing institutions, church institutions, some exemptions in terms of their own policies versus individual members. And I think that's where the line will end up. So we won't have a lot of room for individuals to discriminate. There'll be some exceptions for, you know, renting your basement and small businesses like there are in the law, but we'll have some remaining exemptions for institutions, and that's where it'll go.
It's Quinn Monson. His book is Seeking the Promised Land, Mormons in American Politics. Quinn, thanks for coming
by. Thank you for having me.
Matt Cannon of the Salt Lake Tribune will put a link to your article on our website. Thanks very
much. Thank you very much.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.